Hello and welcome to End Goals, an LCMS Youth Ministry podcast. I'm host Reverend Mark Keislane, and I'm with DCE Juliana Schultz. We are here to bring parents, church workers, and lay leaders discussions and resources to help your youth ministry meet its end goal, which is young people who are disciples of Jesus Christ for life. Today we're going to talk with Reverend Dr. Terry Dittmer about the history of LCMS Youth Ministry.
Working as we do for LCMS Youth Ministry, we get to hear a lot of stories of the history of congregational youth ministry and the ways our denomination and other organizations have served young people. I love hearing people's stories, right? And so many of the successful parts of those organizations or movements had aspects that we still see in our seven practices of healthy youth ministry.
Yes, the preaching and teaching of God's word and relationships built in Christian fellowship have been a hallmark of effective youth ministry. These things have remained constant, even though our world, modes of communication, and the specific pressures of adolescence have changed. Our church body and our country have experienced tumultuous times over the years, yet through it all, Jesus is faithful, and he strengthened his church to be guided by his word.
So we took a break from exploring the seven practices to discuss a little history of some aspects of recent youth ministry in the LCMS. And who better than we got somebody who's had a front row seat to Jesus' faithfulness to his youngest followers. So we could talk a lot about our denomination's care for our young people. And today, you are going to get a fantastic slice.
For this episode, we got out of the studio and connected with Reverend Dr. Terry Dittmer on a wonderful fall day on the patio overlooking his beautiful backyard. To prove it, you'll even be able to hear the birds in the background. Terry had a distinguishing career serving the church. He served as a Lutheran high school teacher, parish pastor, poet, song and hymn writer, and supporter of young people and those who care for them. One of the main ways he did this was as a staff member of LCMS Youth Ministry. He led organizations such as Lutheran Youth Fellowship and served as the department's communication director. In the early 2000s, he served as the director of LCMS Youth Ministry until he retired in 2016. He now lives in Kirkwood, Missouri with his wife, Sherry. He enjoys his home and backyard and spending time with his children and their families.
All right, Terry, we got to hear about you briefly in the intro, but tell us something about your vocations, your roles in youth ministry, and other things that bring you joy.
I do think it's interesting how God stirred the pot. I always wanted to grow up. I always wanted to be a high school art teacher.
Okay.
And went to college, studied art and education. When I was graduating from college, I had three options. One was to become a high school art teacher. I had some opportunities to do that. Second was to go to library science school because I'd worked for, since I was in high school, in the public library.
Okay.
And the third was to go to the seminary. Well, the seminary won between the three. And so I get to the seminary, do the seminary's thing, and it's time for a call. Well, it was 1974.
Oh, yeah.
In 1974, there were a shortage of calls for a variety of reasons. So they were pretty creative. When they're coming to me, well, the high school in New Orleans said that they were looking for either a minister of religion or and somebody who could teach anything in the arts. Well,
check the box.
Check. So we were in New Orleans for 2 years at the Lutheran High School. I was both the theological instructor and I was a high school art teacher.
Awesome.
So the pot was stirred.
Yeah.
Then at the end of the second year, we moved to Farland, Missouri, where I was a parish pastor.
Okay.
Farland, Missouri is outside of Kansas City, and there was a regional youth gathering. 12 districts were organizing Jubilee 78. And they needed a local arrangements manager. So guess who was that person? So then, after Jubilee 78, I did the things that I do, sing and dancing and tapping and all of those kinds of things. And the synod in convention adopted a resolution. This was in 1977. I think 1978. Are the dates important?
No.
Yeah.
Somewhere around the end of the 70s, the Synod decided to that in convention that it wanted to form a new youth organization.
Okay.
So who could that be? Looking for the skills and the theological background and whatever, I was a candidate, and. The call came to me, and I accepted it, and we moved to St. Louis in 1979 and started LYF.
Awesome.
But it was just like God's provided these stepping stones to where I always believed that he wanted me at St. Louis. There were some times where one wondered why. But we did that for 43 years.
Wow. Great legacy.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's great. What other things bring you joy in life right now?
Well, those 11 grandchildren.
Yeah, absolutely.
This estate that we're sitting in right now is interesting. We have a few trees, as you can see.
Yes.
It's beautiful.
Wonderful fall day to enjoy that.
That's right. I enjoy when I'm working in the office. Is it YouTube? The recordings. The interesting choirs. For a while, I was recording all of the choirs that during the COVID thing. Just had a selection of choirs.
Yeah.
And you can find almost anything. So that's nice.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
So we usually ask about your junior and senior high years when we interview people. So can you share for us how Jesus used maybe a key moment or people to bring you closer to him in the church when you were in maybe junior high, high school?
Yes. The there was a teacher, and I went to Calvary Lutheran in school in Kansas City. And there was a teacher there who was not particularly beloved. He wasn't, he just had this kind of curious, he was also the church organist. I don't think people totally appreciated who he was or what he could do, but he was a pretty good organist. Maybe not the best classroom, but a pretty good organist. And I was always tinkling on the piano, and I think I must have mentioned it a time or two that I'd be interested in playing the organ, or could I play the organ? And he one day came and said to me, "Here's the key."
Wow.
The key to the organ was hidden, so people didn't go into the church and turn it on. So he betrayed one of the very very sacred secrets and said anytime I wanted to go up there, just use the key. And then make sure you hide it.
That's great.
So, but it is interesting how a person can have a different opinion of another person. So the larger community didn't really appreciate him. The one-on-one worked rather nicely for if you wanted to play the organ. Interestingly, I used that illustration in a sermon when I preached there once for an anniversary service. And Mrs. Obst, his name was Obst, Mrs. Obst came up to me after church and said, "Thank you for that. Nobody's ever said anything about my husband."
That's neat. So. Yeah. Well, certainly someone taking the time to invest in your talent and desire, certainly one of the many things that continued you on your way on being a great musician and writing songs and hymns and so many things that helped encourage people in their faith along the way. And certainly, as you said, too, being able to be utilized that in leadership in many different roles that you played. I know so much of your life was dedicated to investing in young people the same way that he invested in you. What are some of those things that you love about working with young people, their parents, in congregational settings and just in your community as well?
Well, I've always gotten to enjoy their company in the larger synodical sense.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
And for all intents and purposes, they're very creative. Mm-hmm. Teenagers are very creative. They have a lot of energy. Mm-hmm. Sometimes they have too much energy. memory just passed in front of me. But energy, creativity, I love the way they often confess their faith. Mm-hmm. And they're not afraid to do it. Another word that comes up for me is passion. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. A lot of times they wear mm-hmm. their commitments, their interests, their faith on their sleeve. And they just really don't care who knows about it. Right, maybe that's why I like this shirt with the We Believe so much, because it's talking about, it's not just old people mm-hmm. or older people who have faith, mm-hmm. but teenagers very often really know how to confess and put it into action, mm-hmm. put their faith into action.
But I think the way that you designed LYF and, you know, and just in hearing about how you care about young people, I think you do a lot to feed what they already want to be and do in the church and encourage them in those ways. That's been a huge legacy you've left. But you mentioned going all the way back a little bit about this, but maybe tell us a little bit about Walther League and your experience with it. What was its value for young people? And why maybe do you think it had a lasting impression among young people in congregations in the LCMS?
You know, that I discovered when you shared this, the possible question we might talk about. I think we don't really understand what Walther League was, and probably don't understand what LYF is or was. I don't even know if you use the LYF name. But first thing that I can remember two specific things when I was in high school, mm-hmm. which are silly. The one was that the young people in the congregation were going to throw a Mother's Day party. Mm-hmm. And, of course, if you have tables for desserts and things, you have to have a centerpiece. Uh-huh. So we were all assigned to make Kleenex carnations. You know how
mm-hmm.
I
did that?
I just remember sitting there with Glenda Souders and maybe I shouldn't use names. Huh? Carol, what's Carol's last name? Anyway, we were sitting there folding Kleenex and wrapping pipe cleaners and making flowers for the centerpieces. Now that's a profound theological thing. But it was done under the auspices of the Walther League mm-hmm. at the church at that time.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing I can remember is there was an annual youth retreat mm-hmm. at a YMCA camp mm-hmm. on Memorial Day weekend. Mm-hmm. And 9 times out of 10, Memorial Day in Kansas City was really cold.
Mm-hmm.
But they opened the pool at,
oh, wow.
at the YMCA camp, and people really jumped in. Even though it was miserable, but we did it. So there, the pastor and the grade school principal, and we had a DCE, early DCE.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. We had a campfire at night, and the pastor invited the didn't invite, he told us. we're going to pray Sen's prayers. So everybody, he started it, and then it was going to go around the circle. Mm-hmm. Well, we've all done that. Mm-hmm. And go around the circle, and then the next person would do their sentence, the next person would do their sentence. The caveat in all of this was you couldn't repeat what any of the previous people had said, and there were 40 kids.
Wow. Oh, man.
So who, a long list. Who ends up being?
Right. You don't want to be 40th.
You can't repeat.
Yeah.
You have to come up with this. Anyway, so miserable water and an awful prayer cycle. That's a high school memory. Mm. The Walther League. The Walther League was started in a perhaps in a defense posture with congregations, not just Lutheran congregations, but Catholic congregations and Presbyterians and Episcopalians. There are a lot of immigrants came mm-hmm. over in the mid-1800s. Mm-hmm. Churches needed a way or wanted a way or wanted to pursue a way to keep the people, the young adults, mm-hmm. connected to the church. Mm-hmm. Part of that was a language thing. Mm-hmm. Part of it was a doctrinal thing. Mm-hmm. The Lutherans wanted to be Lutherans, or the Lutheran adults mm-hmm. wanted the kids to be Lutherans. So they did things like building bowling alleys mm-hmm. in their right. church basement. Mm-hmm. And but it wasn't just Lutherans doing it, Missouri Synod Lutherans. Mm-hmm. It was other ethnic groups. It's kind of a fascinating thing mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. How that worked out. So there was a social mm-hmm. organization mm-hmm. that spoke really spoke their language. And so you had these large Lutheran churches speaking German, organizing for connecting young people to the congregation so they didn't go off to the Irish mm-hmm. or maybe I'm being too cynical, but it was a defense mechanism as was, and they were genuinely concerned for the faith of the young people. But now when you look at it historically also, what we think of as the Walther League was really young adult ministry. It was for the 20s and early 30-year-olds to stay connected to the church. It wasn't the junior high or the mm-hmm. senior high. Mm-hmm. There was a senior Walther League was pretty much past 20. The high school age was the junior Walther mm-hmm. League, and then we didn't have junior high. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Over the years, as the organization developed, the age group moved down so that the senior high school kids were the senior Walther League mm-hmm. and the junior high school kids were the junior high kids. And that took 100 years to evolve. Sure.
I'm sure some of that, too, was early on. I think we had a higher percentage of LCMS young people probably in Lutheran schools too, so you had probably through eighth grade education, that's where that ministry was happening a lot, and then maybe was the what next, as they maybe didn't have as many Lutheran high schools and areas and right. things to stay connected.
Well, and the way we think about adolescence mm-hmm. changed out mm-hmm. pretty dramatically mm-hmm. from the late 1800s to in those 50 to 75 years.
Mm-hmm. One thing that I read in some papers that I accumulated yesterday. But the senior high Walther League after World War II began to moderate or meander towards younger ages because mm. these guys fought in World War II mm-hmm. and they came back to their homes, and they weren't interested in making Kleenex carnations. Mm-hmm. They were back from the war. Mm-hmm. They'd seen friends die. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. They wanted to start their own families. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So we might have a different perspective of what the Wathering was and what it became. So from that young adult stage, then it, as we move into the 50s and 60s, it just changed. Mm-hmm. So the Wathering was a pretty interesting, when you look at what it did, like it built the sanitarium in Wheat Ridge, Colorado, mm-hmm. and provided support for taking care of people with tuberculosis. Mm-hmm. That's a pretty significant thing.
Yeah.
The organization built its own building on Chicago, Chicago.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yep.
I don't know whether people know that. Well, maybe don't know it now. Mm-hmm. But it was something that they were really proud of. It supported the new Lutheran Hour radio mm-hmm. program, although it was not their program. Mm-hmm. It was Lutheran Layman's League. Mm-hmm. O.P. Kretzmann was at Valparaiso, mm-hmm. and pretty significant voice for Lutheranism in the 50s. The Wathering began to change in the 60s. Well, probably in the late 50s, but certainly into the 60s. When we got into the middle 60s, we had young adults, teenagers, who were interested in dealing with a lot of the controversies of that day and age. Racism, sexism, global warming. Believe it or not, there was global warming in the mm-hmm. in the 60s. Mm-hmm. The Vietnam War was mm-hmm. an issue, sure. was yeah. a big issue.
Yeah.
There was another one. But where society's young people were rioting on campuses and mm-hmm. doing all kinds of things to get the attention of the adults, the leadership of the Wathering wanted to take those on as well. Mm-hmm. I know population, this is an interesting one to me, population explosion mm-hmm. in the 60s. Mm-hmm. We needed to learn how to have fewer babies. And it's interesting now mm-hmm. that countries around the world, mm-hmm. including China, the populations are aging, and mm-hmm. we don't have enough people to take. Listen to all the shortages yeah. in industry. Mm-hmm. So I just remember that one. It was intriguing to me in the 60s when we're talking about population explosion, and now we're dealing with the opposite. But young people were interested in dealing with those issues, and Wathering people thought that we should deal with those issues from a Lutheran Church, Missouri Synod, mm-hmm. Wathering mm-hmm. position. One of the things the Wathering did really well was conventions, mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Wathering conventions. And in Squaw Valley in 1965 or 7, one of those 60s, they invited Pete Seeger to sing. And Pete Seeger was a significant voice in all of the social upheaval. Uh-huh. Well, that didn't go over very well with some of the elder members of the Missouri Synod. Mm-hmm. And in 1968, the Synod and the Wathering parted company. I don't think they told the church that they had parted company, mm-hmm. but they did.
Yeah.
or they didn't tell them very effectively. So at that point, the Board for Young People's Work, which had existed all the time, but it was like the Board for Young People's Work turned it over to the Water League, and they just monitored what the Water League was doing. So,
because the Water League always had their own leadership, like own board of directors. Right. Like you said, they're in Chicago, so like they had different headquarters. So it was a parallel group that obviously focused more on LCMS, young people, and churches, but yet had its own charter and connection, its own corporation, right?
Raised its own money.
Yeah, right.
Which is an interesting thing. Right. They raised a whole lot of money. But that's another evidence that they're not teenagers. Teenagers don't have the amount of money that needed to be raised to support an office in Chicago and a staff. But there was a clash, a difference of opinion in the mid-60s.
Sure.
And they parted company. Mm-hmm. The Water League went on to do its own thing. And the Missouri Synod largely turned it over to the Board for Young People's Work. Mm-hmm. But at that point, a lot of development happened in terms of district organizations, district events, district leadership. And it focused, so in 78, like I said, in 78, when I was the local arrangements manager for Jubilee 78, that was districts doing the things, 12 districts involved in putting that together. It was also, that became validation for the concept of a national youth gathering, that large groups of people could be accommodated. And we only had, he said, people were amazed we had 2,000 kids in Kansas City.
That's awesome.
But like I said, it was validation for people who wanted to do that. But a lot of the adult church didn't get that there was still youth ministry. Youth ministry was supposed to look like supposed to look like an organization. It's supposed to have officers. It's supposed to have a handbook. It's supposed to do parliamentary procedure. It's an organization. And one of the questions you asked, I think somewhere along the way, was what did we learn? Well, when LYF started in 1979, when we started, our idea was, LYF is going to look like a traditional youth ministry, therefore it's going to have officers. Well, what did the kids tell us from the first national youth gathering in Fort Collins, Colorado? We don't like parliamentary procedure. We really don't care about give us something to do, which is another thing that involves. At the same time LYF was coming into being, so was servant events. And so these kids didn't want to sit in a stuffy room debating. They wanted to do something. And as servant events developed, we see how their energy grew and grew and grew and still takes place today, I believe.
Yes, they do.
Have I answered that question?
Sure.
I'm trying to think of
so it's interesting to me, though, that, you know, there are some things that carry on from, like you talk about, an expectation that youth ministry has this kind of organization, and that carried into LYF, and now we call that youth lead, but we still have, they're not officers, but we still elect young leaders to lead that, because there was value in lifting up young leadership within the organization, right? So that whether we don't necessarily use parliamentary procedure anymore, but certainly the value of bringing in young leaders still is true today. Would you say that?
Yes, and that's another very positive evolvement, is that a word? as things evolve, the whole concept of teenage leaders, a lot of adults don't want to admit that kids can take leadership roles. And I love the election part of LYF. It's interesting how teenagers can raise up really effective peers and take the lead, as it were. That's a good thing that we do or have done.
You talked about some of those early gatherings or the gatherings that sort of were proof of concept for the gathering that we have now. What were some of those key moments from those early gatherings that you think set the stage for the LCMS youth gathering that we have now?
The first thing I thought of was the first one was in Fort Collins, Colorado, and Jack Preuss was president of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. And I don't think people understood how he really liked youth ministry. There's a picture somewhere. I don't know if it could even be located. We don't do digital things in 1980. But there's a picture of him standing on a mountain with his Rejoice in His Presence t-shirt. And they must have taken it with a helicopter, the picture, but it was just, it was an interesting kind of thing with the president of the synod validating the gathering. Mm-hmm. It's amazing to me what the church and its young people can do. In 1986, the youth gathering was in Washington, D.C. Mm-hmm. And what were there, 17, 18,000 teenagers on the Washington Mall with Bill Griffin and Gene Garten speaking. Mm-hmm. I think of that every time I see somebody doing a news report about this important event taking place. We were there.
Right.
One of the side trips was the landing pattern for Reagan Airport. It wasn't Reagan at that time, but the landing pattern went over the gathering kids sitting on the mall. And we wanted to see if we could change that. Mm-hmm. We changed the landing pattern for the duration of... It helped that Ed Meese was the attorney general.
I think so, yeah.
And he's a Missouri Synod Lutheran.
An inside track.
Validation.
So a little bit thinking about, talked about the relationship of the previous board that connected with the Walther League. Obviously, some things changed around districts and synod relation with youth ministry. I mean, we still hear, or maybe we get out into denominational circles or talk to pan-denominational groups, they still talk about how the Missouri Synod has kept youth ministry at the focus of what they do, that we have a youth ministry office, that we do youth gatherings, that we have these ministry things. Where did you see some changes over your time, maybe in ministry as a teacher, pastor, then working for Synod, of how did some of those relationships change and things change coming from the Walther League into where we are now with our structure?
Well, the Walther League basically provided its own funding and its own vision, and all that evolved. And in the late 60s, when the two organizations parted company, the Walther League went away to do its thing. The Synod continued to have a board for young people's work. And the encouragement was for districts to organize what was good for their district.
Okay. Uh-huh.
So you might have one like Minnesota North did rely on the old-fashioned have an election and do parliamentary procedure and that kind of thing. But it was all geared towards what was important or what worked for your group. Mm-hmm. And then annually we had a district leaders conference where the districts would share with one another what kind of things they were doing, what was good in their district, what wasn't working, how could this be adapted. And the board largely took that role on as a separate board until we went to the Board for Congregational Services, where we were subsumed into a larger, there's some logic to that, that the things a congregation does, how does youth ministry impact that or connect to that? How does recognized service organizations help support that? And all the other things that you're doing now, they all kinds of, all kind of evolves.
I think it's fair to say you would see the Synod as being pretty siloed in many ways in terms of having so many boards, having maybe different goals and things and trying to bring that together a little bit more. And resources obviously change too. I think Synod probably had more resources to do the trainings and bring people in than what we do now from a synodical perspective. Just talking straight budget dollars for that.
Right. And one at the early part of LYF, the Synod paid for transportation for all the kids coming from all over.
Yeah.
There ain't the dollars for that anymore.
But what role did you see LYF having to play in that, you know, both synodical and congregational youth ministry over its years?
Well, I think the leadership issue comes up over and over again, how young people can lead. Young people have imaginations and dreams and how could we help churches figure out what was going to work for their church and not put that mandate down and say you have to do it this way? I think we always emphasize youth and adults side by side. In fact, publication called Youth and Adults Side by Side Within Organized Parish Structures. And it was just to look at how could young people impact the things that congregations do. Why is it, I don't have a good example of that. But I think an appreciation for what teenagers can do and connect. And also not to limit, like, teenagers aren't just into sports or aren't just into, they're musicians and they're choir people and they're service people. And so how do you connect them to the whole life of the parish, the whole life of the congregation, or the whole life of the church?
I think one of the things I love in reading some of the history of Walther League is to be able to go back and go, yeah, lots and lots of things have changed, technology's changed, the issues they're dealing with have changed, but largely teenagers haven't changed, and the gospel hasn't changed, right? And that there are still some things that are very true now that were true back then as well. Are there things that you think are that haven't changed over the years when it comes to youth ministry?
Well, the gospel. And the need to help people understand that God loves us and he takes care of us, provides for us. That never changes, for which we are thankful. But maybe it's that there's it's really helpful to remember daily that God does love us and does provide for us and does care and doesn't leave us hanging. And that's probably the good news in all of this, to remember that and to daily live under the grace of God.
I think that's one great thing with the adults we work with. You know, there's so many people who champion that because they either maybe had someone in their life as a young person that was that one that reminded them that on a daily basis, maybe it was parents, pastors, VCs, other people, lay people in their congregation that supported them that way. And they too want that for young people. They're willing to give up their time. We were just at middle school youth gatherings recently, and to see all those adult leaders who are there giving up their weekends to spend time with middle school students so they can hear the gospel and be in Christian community and be refreshed in who they are, and their baptism is awesome to see. And so certainly a legacy that continues for those people who have been touched with the gospel and want to pass that on.
And there's not a time limit or an age limit.
Right.
I remember going to a Missouri District Youth Gathering in 81 or 82. This lady, looking for the oldest adult who came with the youth group. This lady stood up. She was like 85.
Wow.
And they asked her why. She loves kids and loves the Lord.
Yeah, yeah.
And if nobody else is going to get them to the gathering, she will.
She's going to do it.
But it's not just young DCEs or young pastors or... There is kind of this mythology that you have to be in your 20s to be a good adult leader. That's not true. Mm-hmm. Even if your mission in the congregation is just to say good morning, but verbalize, know their name, good morning, John, good morning, Sarah. Everybody's a part of the congregation. Everybody's a part of the community.
If you had to give encouragement to youth leaders today, what kind of encouragement would you give them?
God loves what you do. Share that love. Encourage with that love. Give each other a hug. Don't give up. Don't be afraid. Easy to say. You could write a book on that one.
I think so.
A lot of good words of wisdom right there.
Yeah, don't think that you have to have everything 100% right. Sometimes it's just the time that you're standing next to a person. That can say a lot to them, no matter how much you don't think it's worth. It's worth a lot.
I so appreciate Terry and his wisdom and his mentorship to us, certainly to you over many years in your role. So grateful for him and his gifts to the church and the ways that he's cared for young people over the years.
Yes, we scratched the surface on what Terry could share, and we even still cut off a lot of time of what we got down a lot of different.
He could have sat for a lot longer, for sure.
Yeah, so experienced a lot of things in the church, and just his love for young people and the people who can care for them and support them just obviously comes through so clearly through him, and that is he's been able to see people that have invested in young people and to give thanks for them and for really encouraging young people and their gifts and how they serve their neighbor, serving their church and serving their world is just a beautiful thing. So thankful for Terry and his leadership in youth ministry.
Yeah, and so many people benefited from Terry's advocacy for young people in our church body, even if they didn't know that. And so we're so glad to be able to share a little bit about him from him today. So some closing questions for you to consider. What wonderful memories do you have of youth ministry in the past?
Who in your congregation might you ask to hear more about the history of youth ministry in your congregation?
And how might hearing stories of youth ministry in your congregation or nationally help encourage young people today? We will continue to keep you in our prayers as you love people in the name of Jesus so that 5, 10, 20, 30 years or more down the road, they can do the same.
End Goals Podcast is a production of LCMS Youth Ministry and KFUO Radio. To find out more about LCMS Youth Ministry or to find links to resources mentioned, go to kfuo.org/youthministry. Thank you for listening and caring for the young people of our church.